let's just, there's one thing I don't remember if I finished it off and I wanted to mention it. So we had spoken and last time the end piece about the Zivuk Rishon, Zivuk Sheni, and Lefi Maisav, and so on. We had mentioned Olos Ephraim, there's a Klei Yoker, who had spoken about a bit of a complex system where everybody has a Zivuk, but if people die off and so on, so there's always odds and ends left over, and that's what he says. There's the approach that I think is the most Meniach HaSadas. There's a sefer called Be'er Sheva. Be'er Sheva is written by Reb Mordechai Eilenberg. He was a Talmud of the Levush. Levush actually wrote a Haskama, a very, very strong Haskama, very beautiful Haskama. He was in Italy. Interesting name for somebody in Italy. I mean, most of his Talmidim are Italian, Ezra Figo and others. But he himself wrote a sefer Be'er Sheva. It's a bunch. It's chidushim and all sorts of interesting mesechtes and sota and hurias and tamid Sanhedrin. It's a chashuv sefer, and he wrote tshuvas also. And he writes that he brings different shitas and he says, you know, he's not satisfied. And he says al pi derech kabbalah seems to him to be the most emesa pshat, and it does seem to be the one that seems to sit well with us. Is every single person has, when he's born, there is some neshama that is designated as most appropriate for him. So in other words, most appropriate for him is something part of his bria. That's called Zivug Rishon. When he comes into this world, not always does he get it. That's Lefi Maisav. So there's a potential, and that potential is something which has a certain perfection to it. It's the absolute perfection. Tachlis, what happens really depends on bechira of a person. So we're talking about a certain ideal that exists, and then a certain reality. This would not be much different than let's say somebody who. Comes, we'll say that every Jew comes with a chelak al kaimi mal, and he can realize it and be like a malach, and like it says by Moshe Rabbeinu was isha lakim, and a person could be a very, very ordinary person, and that already depends on bechira. So this also goes into potential versus actualization, realization, etc. That's what I want to finish off with in that point. Okay. Next,
but Rabbi, it's totally on the bechira of both people, surely. I'm not just
correct. If I mean, I assume that the bigger tzaddik he is, or she is, and the bigger a rush the other person is, the less it'll go. You're right. It's not an objective prize. It has to go. They both have to fit the bill. Okay. Let's see the next piece. The next piece is a Gemara in Daf Gimel, and Maral brings, and it says that Tanya, Reb Meir Oimer, Adam Oiva Aver Beseisa, V'Kadosh Baruch Hu Machaz Ola Begoli. A person does an Aver Beseisa, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu is Machaz Begoli. The Shenema V'Avol of Ruach Kina, V'Ein Avira Loshen Hachroza, Shenema Tzav Meishav Avir Kol Ba'Machne. So Reb Yochanan says, Reb Nachman Baritzak, Reb Meir says that the Isha was Oven Avera Beseisa, that's the nature of these Averas, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mefarsimit, Machrizit Begolui, and so on. It's a little bit unclear. It's a Mishnah. Mishnah Pekavis says that kol amachal shem shayim beseisa nifroy mimene begoli. So you have a. It seems to be very, very focused on one specific avera. It seems to be unique to chol Hashem rather than general averas. And here, Reb Meir is kind of a sweeping statement. That's one point that we need some clarification. Over here, over there, Rashi says that Rashi has another problem. He doesn't say it, but it's obvious. What does it mean? Yemachal Shem Shemayim Beseisa. By definition, Chol Shem Shemayim needs some fahesia. So how is it shayach that a person should be Mechal Shem Shemayim Beseisa? I mean, Chazal give us advice that if somebody can't overcome his Yetzer Hara, he should go to a place that nobody knows him and sort of do what he wants to do and not be Mechal Shem Shemayim. So Rashi learns the following, that a person who is a big tzaddik, and when he does averis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to chas v'shalom punish him. Now, people don't know that. People look around and say, wow, what a big tzaddik, and look, what a terrible punishment. And that is a chil Hashem. And v'meila, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he makes sure that he gets people find out what the averis is, so they can put two and two together. That's what Rashi seems to say over there in the Mishnah. But let's go to the moral as he explains over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Marcha is a love. Ki roya l'chol chet sheye begolui yoyse min ha-mitzvah v'zeh mipnei ke-oyse mitzvah en oyse roysha v'heke ba'ilam v'hefer zeh achoyte kasha achoyte oyse heke v'roysham gol ba'ilam v'lachein ha-oyva aver b'seis HaKadosh Baruch Hu Marcha begolui mo'di ha-chetoy ki roya sheba l'chet begolui v'avein zeh. So the moral says over here that this is something, I guess, what's the right word for it? It's within the nature of the difference between chet and mitzvah. Is not mayrich a lot, so I'm going to, we'll try to understand what he says over here. Averis themselves are activities that increase the materialism of the world. Whatever is bad about the world gets increased through Avera. Avera is a maisa of some type of indulgence in midos that are physical material. A person kills somebody, ritzicha, that's coming from a kinna, from a sinner. A person is a bal taiva. All of those averis mean that I've succumbed to some sort of physical type of activity, which by its nature strengthens that world. So, you know, when people look around, they see people doing averis, they say, yeah, obviously people are people and the flesh and blood, not more, and so on and so forth. A person who does mitzvahs, so mitzvahs really belong to a different world. Mitzvahs don't really have their expression in this world. Tzitzis and tefillin and lulav, they use objects of this world, but the content of it transcends this world. Chesed, kedusha, tov, mishpat, all of these are really ideals that transcend this world. This world doesn't have in it the units of mitzvahs. If we were to talk like language of logic, in the universe set of this world, there are no mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are not elements of this world. Even chesed, you do chesed within this world, but this world is not a chesed place. So mitzvahs don't have a way to really express themselves in this world. And that's why it's Schar Mitzvah by Al-Malekah. Averis are the nature of this world. Averis are items that are of this world. And therefore, averis can find expression in this world. So he's not so much saying why a HaKadosh Baruch Hu would do it, as much as he's emphasizing, his point is, if things are meant to be public, why are we unfair and we only publicize averis, not mitzvahs? And on that, the moral is explaining that averis are things that by definition, they proclaim themselves. Yes.
Doesn't Ramchal say that when a person does an avera, he pulls himself down, he pulls the world down. When he does a mitzvah, he pulls himself up and he pulls the world down. So even though they're not so there might be things, but they do have an effect in this world, right? They do affect the idea.
But let's sharpen the definition. When we say we pull up this world, means we make it into something that this world is not. So, Lamashal, if a person does good things, a person is exceedingly kind or self-disciplined and things of that nature, so the person is becoming more malachtik. Like in Yom Kippur, we look like malachim, we don't eat, we don't drink, we stand straight, etc. So that means that he's moving this world to a different place, but it wouldn't reflect itself in this world. It would be, it's sort of his mala, whatever his mala with him, to a place higher than this world. The default setting of this world is a physical world. That's what Olam Hazeh is. And this is what he does, and this is what the person is. And when you do a mitzvah, you're really sort of taking yourself above it. You're taking out whatever is possibly good in this world and moving it forward. I think that's the pshat. Okay, next piece over here. The Maral doesn't give us any clue as to why Kadosh Baruch Hu's machris by Chil Hashem. It's very over there. The Maral explains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to undo his Chil Hashem. The Maral explains it his way, but it's the same idea. A Chil Hashem is where you ke'ilu seem as if you can get away with it, and you can't, you know. You less din less dain chas v'shalom, and when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is poreya begolui, there it becomes very apparent that there yesh din v'yesh dain. So over there there's a very clear element that's called midah keneged midah, of undoing the harm you've done in the world, restoring kvod shemayim. That's the way the Maral explains it over there. Over here, it doesn't. Really, it's not really clear what that means. I would venture to guess the following, and I'm using the Maral to project a step further. It says, "Drocher darchei Noam, b'chol nesivoseh shalom." That "Drocher darchei Noam" means that the things in this world are. It's not that mitzvahs. They must be pleasant in order to be a mitzvah. That's like the reform or conservative, that the first mitzvah is things be pleasant, and then we start our list afterwards. There are obviously mitzvahs that are not so pleasant. But Drachad al-Nasr means that the mahalach of the world of mitzvahs fits this world, and they are good in this world. The Maral's, when he speaks about Al-Ken Tzipa Yagir Achmecha and so on, He speaks about it being Xeris and not Rachmim, and he keeps going back and forth and saying, yes, it is a Rachmim, but it's a Xeris, not a Rachmim, and the world is built on what is, not on what on what's good, and so on and so forth. I want to try to explain what he means. He speaks about it in Tiferes Yisrael. Let's take a mashal. Imagine you have a doctor who studies physiology, muscular movements. I think it's called kinesthesiology. It's how the muscles work and operate and so on. And he works out that a person's muscles and bone, etc., are built in such a way that if you don't use it, it creates problems. It starts becoming not stretchable. If you use it more, if you carry more than X amount of weight on it, it becomes stretched out and can't snap back. It loses its elasticity. The way the muscles and so on are shaped, and you've got to walk an hour a day, not run, not sit. You have to carry weight in a certain way. On, so that the weight is distributed on the stronger muscles, v'chulu, v'chulu, v'chulu. So the doctor has studied the body, has figured out the body, and has presented a way of life that's in consort with how the body is built, shaped, etc. One will assume that doing that is going to be good. because basically the instructions are in line with the way the body is. And so it's not correct to say my doctor gives me instructions based on what I like to do. He gives me instructions based on how the body is built, but it is our gut feeling that doing things the way the body is built will be positive. So I may want to sit now, I may not want to walk, but if the muscles need walking, I'll push myself to walk, and eventually that will feel good because I'm in sync with what the body is shaped like. It's following through on what on the way it's built. So I think what the morale means over there is mitzvahs are gzeros. They're statements of facts. In other words, this is the way a person is built, and these movements are positive and these movements are negative. It is true, therefore, that if one does what's positive, he will develop well, and things, you know, both Ruchnius and in the connection of Ruchnius and Gashmius, and vice versa. So a society built on Torah will function nicely, a society not built on Torah will function poorly, but the mitzvahs are not a description of what's pleasant and unpleasant, it's a description of what the mitzvahs looks like. And b'meila, if I follow what the mitzvahs looks like, it's going to be positive. That, I think, is what the morale means then to Farisol, basically. And I would like possibly to apply it somewhat here. Our sense of Averis is, you know, there's nothing lost with Avera. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't like that I should eat pork. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't like I should be Mezaneh. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't like I should speak Lashon Hara. Those are all things that, there's nothing wrong with it, in meaning you're not going to fear the worst for it, but it's Akash Baruch Hu wants it and he imposed it on us. So if I do it, what he's showing here is if I do it b'seser, it's going to express itself b'goli. Imagine a person pretends that he's a very kind of ascetic person, but at night when nobody's looking, he gorges himself on, you know, on chocolates and so on, whatever it is. And his weight will put a lie to his statements about his sitkas and his tanesim. We're going to ask ourselves, if you really fast round the clock, how in the world did you gain 100 pounds? So the machrizin olav is I think the way the morale is explaining it here means the averus affect the mitzias, and therefore if a person is being mezaneh, it's not no harm is done, it just kind of exerts a kasev. It will destroy his family and it will become a sore point. It's going to be something that will have a bad effect. So the machrizin alav begolui is sort of this idea that averus take their toll in this world, because the averus are based on what HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how he made the world, and a description of what activities are in sync with the way the world is made and which not. So if Ish and Ish are supposed to be V'davak B'Ishtavoy L'Basa Echad, Znus is a steer to it, and it will destroy the Basa Echad. It will destroy the ability to create that one person. It'll create inevitably a rift and so on and so forth. There is a there's a Rabbeinu Bechaya and others. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says it on Ora Shalokim Sivra Torah Zos, that people who say that the Torah is true, that the Torah is has the right to impose its mitzvahs on you, but they don't necessarily have a toelas. They're not of much use, except HaKadosh Baruch Hu was gozer and so on. On them is Ora Shalo Yokim Nirasos. Yokim means to affirm that these mitzvahs benefit a person. They benefit them in a ruchnistic way, in a deeper way, but they are of great benefit, and averus are of great loss. And a person who doesn't do that, doesn't feel that way, he is he's over the Ora Shalo Yokim. Okay, that's this one. The next one is Amir Shalakish.
Just a quick question.
Yes.
That one. In a certain way, if a person does the Avera,
yeah,
so it creates a certain hole in this world.
Yes.
The Chiddush over here is that the Hashem will be Megala, the source of that, because where did that come from, right?
Correct.
You say like that?
And so I would say the machrizin is that, right, it becomes markedly pronounced. It's the true dimension of that vera, just like the true dimension, the true essence of a mitzvah reveals itself in the world to come. The true essence of a vera needs to reveal itself here. And it needs to become, you know, something that's a fact rather than a personal wrongdoing. So the machrizin here is... Akash Baruch Hu makes it part of what's visible, as opposed to something hidden.
Is it that the person should get kapara, or not necessarily just the reality?
I would say just reality also. I assume it's something which is a it might have a kapara to it, but it starts first and foremost as a mitzias. This is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu does it. okay. The next piece of Gemara here is Amar. Rish Lakish Amar. In Adam Oiva Averil Imke Nechaz Veiruach Shtus. Shneme Ish Ish Ki Siste Ishtoi Tistek Siv. You could lay in a tishte milosha shaita. That's the second mime over here. First, there's an obvious problem with this, that a person plead an insanity defense, that, you know, the Torah says that nechas beruach shtus, so obviously the Torah called me shaita, and therefore I'm shaita is part of mitzvahs. I assume not. I assume that this gemara doesn't serve as a permanent disclaimer for any averus he did. If it's an aver, it must be a shaita, and therefore I'm part. Obviously, it's not this type of avera. It's not this type of shaita. It's more like a certain quality. It's not somebody who's part of a kol mitzvahs, because then if you're doing while you're doing one aver, you'd be part of all other mitzvahs. You'd be a shaita. Certainly not going to work. So let's understand a few things. First, so he says over here, elim kinas roshtus.
So one moshale. What if it is nechnas roshtus? What there's a point of bechira here, right?
Correct. In a certain sense, exactly. That's what I'm saying. You couldn't use it as a defense. The same question. You could not use it as a defense, a defensive mechanism, as a defense argument. So So let's first see what he says. Elkinach beruach shtus pirish keitzla seichel letemotzei chet lekachama inan choytegen beruach shtus. Vazu choyte. Bechein shloima kara harasha ksil b'chol sefer kahelas v'avon zehetev. So first, let's understand a little bit about what is meant by the shtus and the ruach shtus, and if you take a look at the description of a shaita in halacha. A shaita is not someone who's deficient in his ability to absorb information, compute, or any skill. What we would say to somebody who has a low IQ, who is deficient in skills, none of that appears as a description of a shaita. A shaita is somebody who does things that are reckless, foolhardy, or best said, irresponsible. Now, the irresponsibility means a disconnect from my seichel and das to my activities. A person who drives recklessly can probably, many of them could quote you the statistics about car accidents, etc., etc. It doesn't help all that much. Teenagers are not deficient in information. That's not where their problem lies. The problem lies in connecting their world of activities to their world of knowledge. That's called das, and someone who's a bar das does that. A shaita is someone who is irresponsible and can't connect the two together. So sometimes it's something that is a sometimes it's inborn. It's like the person, let's say, is lacking. It's just whatever it is, you know. Some people just are deficient, and they have the responsibility of a child at the age of 50. I mean, you know, that's a real shaita. You also have a teenager who is not the knowledge that he has of what's right and wrong is not connected terribly well to his activities, to his nexus of activities, and that's why he'll do things that are crazy and stupid and make no sense. They don't. There is no sense in it. Let's take an example of an adult. Let's take a little bit of a different setting. We're all aware of group dynamics. A person comes together with a group of people, and somebody whips the crowd into frenzy, and they do things that are crazy. And the person feels that he was swept up with a certain ruach. In other words, the ruach is a certain mode of being that allows him to act with disconnect from his seichel. Let's take an example that's very, very contemporary. In Western civilization, one of the most important activities at the end of the day and the middle of the day is to drink, the happy hour. What the happy hour does for a person is, what the alcohol does is, it allows him to disconnect his knowledge, understanding of his responsibilities, his problems, his challenges from himself. And sure enough, two or three shots later, he's disconnected from it. He doesn't feel it at all. And now he is, you know, he's tipsy. And he'll do and say things that Seichel would tell him are no-no. But that's where he is. So we have the ability to draw on us a temporary ruach that disconnects ourselves from reality. Whenever we set up a type of environment like that, a Bachram's Purim, it's whippy-doo, whatever, a college campus, a fraternity house, all these are places where people set up a makom. I want a makom where my knowledge will not encumber and restrain myself. And this is a place where you can do anything and anything goes. And we're non-judgmental. We don't judge you. You don't have to judge yourself. So a person is inducing a certain ruach shtus into himself. The Rambam says, it's Rambam Mor Nevuchim. Incredible Rambam. He speaks about Nezirus. He says Nezirus, in one way, is worse than Arayus, because a person is deliberately castrating his mind from his person, and there's nothing worse than that. and then the person will drive recklessly. The person will do crazy things because he's disconnected it. We wouldn't, if a person were fully aware of what's right and what's wrong, and his responsibility, and the fact that this did, he wouldn't do avera. He would have a taiva to an avera, but when you see a person who gets swept up in taiva of arayas, he's a different person. He's weird. He's childish. He's kilu. He doesn't know what's going on with himself. He will do things that are crazy, stupid, and so on. So he has the ability. The Ruach Shtus is not something that forces him to do an Avera. Ruach Shtus is a temporary fix that allows him to survive his mind. Now, this is you know, a different setting, and the person is meshuchrar. The person is kind of relieved of his chains of restriction, obligation, so on and so forth. So any type of, so the Ruach Shtus HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us whenever there's an Avera, like Arayas comes along. A person needs, if a person were to think of the consequences of Arayas, so if the person, let's say, would have Cheshik, let's give an example. If a person would have Cheshik to do an Avera, but he would know the consequences, and they are very difficult consequences. It you know, it's Misa in the times of Gemara, it's break up your family, it's being forever shamed. These are tremendous consequences, and there isn't an enjoyment. But I don't think if anyone sitting back would weigh the enjoyment, the consequences, that he would take it. So what happens is our mood changes, our emotion changes. We get caught up with a sort of an acceleration of sorts that doesn't let us connect. It's like a novocaine of sorts. It allows us to numb anything else and allows it to davera. So the Ruach Shtus is not HaKadosh Baruch Hu making us do the Avera, but it's like Paro. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is letting us. I once heard, it says in the Sfarim HaKadoshim, that there's a Ruach Tahara, and it's the next Gemara also that a person's mekane b'ishtev nichts by Ruach Tahara. The Sfarim HaKadoshim say, just like the Ruach Shtus, Ruach Tahara, which means an extraordinary Ruach to do good, that's above it. I might have said a story once, and you'll excuse me if I did. There was a Yid, Reb Dov Sokolovsky. He lived near a yeshiva. He was a brother of Reb Lezer. He was a nephew of Reb Lezer Finkel. He married Reb Avrom Tzvi Kamai. He was Mir Rav. Rav Tzvi Kamai was a brother of Reb Lezer Yudel. Reb Lezer Yudel married his sister. He married Rav Tzvi Kamai's daughter. And he was a very bright bocher in Europe. He was kind of a real wit. He came to Yerushalayim after the war with his wife, and he became a very, very, very serious Baal Avoda. He lived like a block or two down from the Mir. He had a kol al meyasharim. He was phenomenal Baal Chesed. And it was a big kanoi for mitzvahs, in a very kind and gentle way. But Shmir, he would go to Eged and speak to them about keeping Shabbos, and how much better it'll be for them, and he'll raise money for them. You know, he was a real tzaddik, a wonderful person. And Nebuch didn't leave over family. So at his levaya, a fellow was masped him. And this fellow was like, I don't know what to call him, his gabbai, or you know, whatever, his man. And he said the following story, that Reb Dov Sokolovsky called him in once and said, you know, I have a big gemach and I gave a loan to somebody, and I'm beginning to suspect that loan is a bad loan, and I need to look into it and find out what's the story. So the loan was an address to somebody in Ranana, Ramla, I know, somewhere far from Yerushalayim. This fellow went down there. The address was bogus, the phone number was bogus, no person like that lived in the town. The whole thing was a sham from A to Z, and this person ended up absconded with a few thousand shekel, which in those days was a sum of money. When he came back, he asked Reb Dov Sokolovsky, you know, Rebbe, like, I mean, you're a seasoned gemach owner. Had you let a fly by night rip you off? So Reb Dov told him, I remember exactly what happened. He said, Friday, early afternoon, a Georgian Jew came to me. Georgia, not like American Georgia, but like the East Europe, like Russia, Georgia, former Soviet Union, Georgia. And those days there was a big aliyah of Georgian Jews, and they had and they were usually given, they were big bulky fellows, a lot of muscles, and the government employed them en masse to load and unload stuff in Lod, in Ben Gurion Airport. The problem was that it was 24/7, you had to work on Shabbos. So basically these people were forced to mechallel Shabbos. So he said, this person came to me and he said, Rabbi, he said, you know, I'm working in Lod, I have mechallel Shabbos, I never wanted to. Someone just offered me a partnership in a kiosk. If I can give him 6,000 shekel by today in the evening, then I'm a part owner of the kiosk, and I don't have to work anymore in Lod, and I don't have mechallel Shabbos, and I can be shomer Shabbos. So Rav Dov Sokolovsky told this person, as soon as I heard the word Shabbos, I became drunk. I didn't think, I didn't ask, nothing. I gave him the money, I grabbed, I signed him on a piece of paper, and I had him, I said, run quickly and buy into it, and finished. And this will be the last Shabbos you'll ever work in your life. So there is a zel umaseh. It's a sort of a mindset, a euphoria of sort that disconnects. It's something that allows, maybe we'll speak about it next time, for toiv in some ways. And it's also, it's the only thing that allows us to do averis, a big averis. So the only way in which we're able to cope with doing avera while we're bardas is to have a ruach shtus. So Rom comes says, but you have, sometimes a class that's a good class and the kids are great, but somebody just kind of creates a ruach and they're all over the place and they're crazy. That's a ruach shtus, and that's absolutely necessary for an affair of this kind. And meidach gisa, it's something which a person still has bechira, but in a sense, this enables a bechira. It allows me to inject myself with something that will numb me to the consequences for the hour or two that I'm doing avera, and allows to do avera. Okay, any questions?
Yeah, just Rabbi Israel and Yerav Samusa.
Yeah.
He seems to say that they're two separate things, right? One is the taiva, and the other one, he seems like they're two kind of ponim in averas, right? One is, if I got a taiva to do something, whatever right. It is, and the seichel has to come against that. But he seems to say there's another one where you don't even get like a physical hana, and that's more right. Ruach HaShtus, like he says, speaking Lashon Hara. He doesn't seem to apply it to like a hard physical avera.
But even Lashon Hara, you know, there's always some motive. There's no physical taiva. I mean, it's something to talk about, but there's no physical taiva in Lashon Hara. But there is a reason. People like to be the center of attention. When I've got, you know, most people who speak Lashon Hara get a lot of attention. If you're the guy who knows all the scandalous news, then everybody is interested in talking to you. If you're the person, you know, you can put somebody down through it. You know, there are different motivations. It's hard to understand that There's no physical taiva. It's true, there's no physical craving, but there are emotional reasons why we do these things. So I'm not sure about that. It's something to discuss about. Okay, good. So Shabbos and Mitzvah next week should be okay.
Okay, thanks, Rabbi.
Okay, call to bye. Shabbos.